Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This podcast is also a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. I created Better Leaders, Better Schools because I was fed up of not having deep conversations, vulnerable, authentic conversations about school leadership. And that's why you keep coming back week after week. You listen to this podcast as an investment in your own leadership development. If you would like to invest in the production of Better Leaders, Better Schools, I have really good news. It's extremely affordable. $1 or $2 a month will go very far and make a big impact. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. To become a patron, it's easy. Just click the link in the show notes, become a patron. Thank you for investing in yourself and thank you for investing in this podcast. Thank you for listening every week. Let's get this show started.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
You know, we tend to gravitate toward what we're accustomed to and what's most familiar. And this was really a step out there. I tell people ask me if I was nervous, and I say, no, terrified.
Well, Mark, I'm so excited to connect with you today. We're both a part of the community with Aaron Walker. And he had you on a weekly webinar where you were just sharing, I mean, so many incredible insights. You mentioned that you had a TED Talk, and my jaw just dropped as you really dug into leadership. You dug into how this idea of, or these questions you ask, how many can you hit? How high can you hit? Swinging for the fences, the idea of builders versus fixers, which is your TED Talk. So maybe we should just start there. You're famous now, Mark. How did that opportunity even occur, and how did you, I guess, formulate the topic for your TED Talk?
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, Daniel. I had two or three shots at it, and I ignored them. The company, I'm with UPS, and you know, there's 400,000 employees at UPS, and they sent out some emails company-wide and said, hey, we're having a TED at UPS event. Submit an idea, you know, and who knows, maybe you'll get selected. And I remember seeing that come up, and I was kind of in the middle of reading email, and it was just kind of went into my pile, you know?
Yeah.
And finally, a friend at corporate who's in communications dropped me an email and said, hey, you ought to give this a shot. I think you could do good at it. And so I thought, well, all right. My wife was like, yeah, go. So they had a questionnaire, a one-page questionnaire, and that was like, you know, what is your idea? How did it come about? What interests you about it? And so I filled out the questionnaire, and you know, it was, I probably kind of labored over it for a couple of days, really trying to think about something that I thought might be interesting. And the theme of the event was think, solve, do. And I just started thinking about the work I do every day. I'm like a consultant for UPS. And just, it's occurred to me many times before that, you know, trouble is an important element in my job. It's like, it's a requirement. There has to be some tension, or there's nothing to work on or try to improve. So just sketched it out, and it was interesting. I sent it in, and then I got another email and said, well, show us what it would look like. Send us an outline of what do you think the talk would look like. And went through that process, and it was then that I started to get a feel for how difficult this was going to be, you know. And it was funny because, you know, we always think of creativity as being this, I don't know, I probably had a lot of the wrong impressions about it, that, you know, you're waiting for these bolts from the blue and you get alone and get somewhere and get silent and, you know, hum and hope that it comes to you, I guess.
Right.
But it was just a lot of work. And I went through that process, sent the outline in, and then I had a wonderful conversation with the main curator for the event, and she's a former investigative journalist, and she was like, I love this topic. She taught at, I think, Berkeley on the topic, investigative reporting. And anyway, so from there, she said, well, we've had 300 or 400 submissions. We're down to 30. If you're one of the 30, we'll assign you a couple of coaches, and kind of hung up, and it was a wonderful call. I learned so much in such a short time, and then I finally got word. I was on my way into a customer visit, and I got the call from a director who was, geez, she sounded more excited than I did, and said, you're in.
Wow.
And I'm like, great. And then the real work began.
So you said that you learned quite a bit going through that process. Do you remember some of those specific learning moments that you had?
Yeah, you know, and some of it was kind of comical, Daniel. I had a couple of coaches that were in Tel Aviv, and so we did Skype sessions, weekly Skype sessions, and I'd rehearse. And you know, it was kind of funny that I was really focused on the content piece, but I noticed on every call, they were like, we'd get a little bit of the pleasantries out of the way, and then they're like, just, okay, give it to us. Let's see it. You know, mm-hmm. they wanted to see it. I don't even know how much they really focused on the draft that I sent them, but they were looking at me, and just the task was for me to own this, the material, you know?
Wow.
And so they had some funny, one of the coaches said that, you know, it's normal to go through this phase where you're just, all these ideas are coming out. And he said, we call it overly profound syndrome. And it was so true because, you know, it's like you have this opportunity. So you're going to try to share every smart sounding insight you ever had, but they keep having to corral you back to that original idea. And they're brilliant at it. I'm still kind of bowled over by how they use psychology to kind of feed to you the process a little bit at a time so you don't get overwhelmed. And there's so much encouragement and really not a lot of focus on the parts that aren't really don't fit or don't measure up. They're really focused on that kernel of that original idea, and that's what they really want to put a shine on. And I don't know, I could go on and on about the coaches, just that facet of it.
I think what I'd like to focus on is this idea of owning your material, because to me, when you're in a building, you know, you need to own that building as a school leader. And a lot of leaders are going to have a vision that they think is the right direction the school needs to go, that it's going to impact an incredible amount of students' lives, that this is just the right direction for the community, yet they may not be able to inspire and mobilize the community to get fired up, to get all hands on deck, right? To make this vision a reality. And this idea of ownership, I wonder if there's anything that you can translate for us there that school leaders can take to their buildings and own their vision for their people.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what it made me think of, Daniel, is that the best thing we have to offer is what's really ours, what's authentic in us. And I learned a little bit about writers. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard great writers say that they start a novel and they don't know what the end's going to be, how it's going to end. And there's a part of that here. I don't know about you, but when I get an assignment like this, I need to write or create something. I start looking for all the experts to get what's the best information that's out there. And this process kind of made me think I'm starting on the wrong end. And by that, I mean, until I really think about it myself, and in your example, my vision, you know, what is it that I might be able to do that nobody else could, because, you know, I've got a unique experience and unique insight. And I think that the TED process made me realize that that's really what they were trying to draw out and what I needed to draw out of myself through this, a lot of flailing and late nights and, you know, trying to hammer it out. That was one of the other things too, that it was a big learning for me, is it's this creativity start, or this creativity stuff, and maybe in term here might be visioneering, is hard work. It's much harder to develop your own vision that's yours than it is to read all the books, and not that those things aren't helpful, but I think the best we have to offer is what's really uniquely ours.
Yeah, so I think what you're saying there is to have something, to be authentic, be true to who you are. It's not necessarily learning from the experts and regurgitating what they do really well, but it's finding out what sets you apart, what makes you exceptional, honing in on that and expressing it to your audience, to your community. Does that sound correct?
Yeah, sure. And then, of course, what you're hoping to tap into is what's unique about your school or those are around you, you know. And it's kind of like it almost catches. I think that if others can see the authenticity in you, then it may be easier for them to be authentic as well. And it's what we want for ourselves. But I'm sure it's the case in education or any worthwhile endeavor that you really want to draw out what's unique and best in others.
So how do you identify that the builder fixer idea is uniquely yours?
Well, that was based on experience. I had an assignment in one of our hubs once to try to improve a process. And I was part of a team. And it was interesting that I was in a meeting and we pretty much worked, we'd spent a lot of hours coming up with our plan. And we were trying to improve a process for processing international shipments for export. And it was just real manual and kind of clunky. And I remember the day we went to present it to the director, you know, he listened for a while. And we had our shiny binders and our presentations and everything. And I remember him putting one of the binders down finally at one point and saying, you know, guys, we need to quit fixing things and start building something. And that was like 26 years ago, I think. But it really stuck with me. You know, I can still picture him, the way he was sitting and the way he put the binder down in front of him. And it just really resonated with me. And so in a sense, I guess I did lift that piece. But I've reflected on that a lot because, you know, I call on people every day and a lot of people are just really, a lot of people are pretty overwhelmed, you know. And I think we know at some level that the more we just keep fixing things, the more things we're going to have to fix, unless we can build something that really works, that's really worthwhile. And it's going to eliminate some of those things that we're playing whack-a-mole with, like I say in the talk.
Yeah, so that is that sort of a Band-Aid approach versus something that's actually going to get to the root and solve the problem?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, it's required. We've got to have fixers and builders, really, when it comes down to it. But I think the companies that really thrive are the ones that are more focused on what they're trying to build and not just making what they have now at this moment in time better and better. You know, they've got to look down the road and see what's coming. And build something that's going to adapt to the, you know, incredibly disruptive climate now, business climate we find ourselves in.
Yeah. You know, I think that's so appropriate for school leaders as well, because they can really easily lose their day fixing all the fires, all the problems that come up at a school. I'm sure you can only imagine, you know, what a school administrator engages with every single day. But they gotta build in a good chunk, probably the majority of their day, to think forward, to have that builder's type of mindset, not only to inspire the community about where they're going and how they're going to serve the kids, but also to create something that's going to last as well. Because I think, you know, you sort of described that in business, that you got to have that builder's mindset or you'll become obsolete. And the example you gave, if I remember correctly, was a Blockbuster, and the guy from Netflix actually wanted to help them online, and they shunned that away because they had more of a fixer mindset, right, instead of this builder mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that incredible?
It is incredible, because now it's like you can't even imagine a world without Netflix, right?
I know. I just saw something the other day about how they're using big data to create House of Cards.
Hmm.
And it's brilliant. I mean, it's an amazing, amazing company. And, you know, one of the things I was thinking of, Daniel, when you were talking was I fell into my own trap when I was preparing my TED Talk.
Okay.
And by that, I mean, you know, I told you I had that first wonderful conversation with the curator for the event.
Right.
Well, I hung up and I had all my notes and I remember it clearly and didn't realize it, but I took on my fixer mindset and thought, okay, I got to fix this draft, something that, you know, will incorporate what she just, I make the corrections she just gave me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it made me realize how easy it is for us to fall into that mode. And a little bit of the embarrassing side of that was, you know, maybe 3 weeks before the event, I had a rehearsal with her again, and she really lit into me. And I hung up the phone. It was in a good way, you know, because
sure.
it was couched in, I want them on their feet when you're done, right?
Right.
Which I thought was really important. You know, swinging big is, I was thinking too small.
Hmm.
And so it was funny because I hung up from the phone and I'm like, why did I try to fix what I'd given originally instead of using that as the foundation to really try to build something new and, you know, as impactful as I can make it. So it's really hard to not fall into that mode because I feel like in a sense, that's kind of what we do best is just react and plug holes and I guess keep up. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that can take our attention that require fixing, but building is really a much more deliberate and painful act.
Do you think it would be appropriate to say that a fixer attitude would be a safer play?
I think it is, because it's what's most obvious, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, my knee jerk when I let's say I go in on a visit and I'm part of a team and we're consulting with a customer and I see the problem surface and I want to jump right in and name the solution. And when I'm with less seasoned salespeople, I see them wanting to do that. But if we can just kind of stick with it and hear more about the story, where they want to go and what they want to accomplish, we're much better off, you know, building a more robust supply chain with that solution as a part of, than we are just, okay, let's focus in on this problem, because it's really easy to just want to bat that thing down and kill it and say, look at what we did.
So what would you say to folks then that want to maybe shift from a fixer mindset to a builder mindset? Do you have any tips or any keys that would help with that process?
You know, Daniel, sometimes it seems really obvious to me, but I know that it's not simple. But what does in the scenario I just described, what does my customer really want? I mean, do they want to grow a business that's remarkable? I have found customers who have a successful business. And when I suggest that, you know, if you had some better processes in place and some more people and a little bit more aggressive and creative marketing plan, I would think this business really has some legs. And there are times when they just say, you know what, I like it like it is. So it's important to think about, I guess, what we really want. It's just the trouble is that stasis, you quickly run out of gas, you know, and the marketplace or the educational community keeps moving. And, you know, it's that old quote about learners and, you know, inheriting the world.
So I think that's a good question to ask really everybody in a school community, the kids, the staff, the parents, you know, what are we trying to build here with our school? And that really reminds me a lot of Simon Sinek in starting with the why.
Yeah.
To really solidify, like, this is where we're going. And my pastor, Bill Hybels, he talks about that all the time, moving from here to there.
Yeah.
And you want to get people uncomfortable with the norm, right, with where we're at, even when you're operating at a high level. But you paint this picture of the promised land of where you're going, right?
Yeah.
And, man, that's swinging for the fences, as you would say. That's inspiring. That'll get people off the couch. It's scary, though. It's so scary.
It is. You know, it can be overwhelming at times just to keep up, you know, and it is. It's scary to think of taking on something, you know, even bigger. This whole TED experience caused me to really think about my own comfort level. You know, we tend to gravitate toward what we're accustomed to and what's most familiar. And this was really a step out there. I tell people ask me if I was nervous, and I say, no, terrified. You know,
yeah.
It took me out of my comfort zone. I was nervous. It was scary. And then I had to actually give the talk. What a great experience. You know, I would do it. My wife asked me at one point, she was like, what do you think it would cost to pay for the experience of learning to give a TED talk? Yeah. And I thought about it and I thought, well, you know, it's got to be worth 10 grand, I would say. I mean, I don't know. To me, that sounds like a lot of money. Maybe that's not to a lot of people, but it was worth so much just from the payoff for a life experience to go through it.
That's powerful. So the 10 grand experience, it costs you a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, but totally yeah. Worth it.
Oh, yeah.
How would you describe your leadership style? And how did you develop it?
You know, for a long time, I was kind of foggy about that, Daniel. And then I got involved in a group where we go around and speak to kids at students, I should say, at colleges.
Okay.
And we talk about leadership. And, you know, when I first had that opportunity, I'm with people that are usually about, you know, 15, maybe 15 or 20 years older than me, that are wiser than me. And in fact, the kids are actually more interested in hearing from, because I'm about their parents' age. And, you know, I think they feel like they've heard enough from people that age.
Yeah. We've heard everything you have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of fell into that overly profound syndrome.
Uh-oh.
Again, because I just wanted, you know, I wanted to impress. And then the more I started to think about it, I'm kind of the don't do what I did, guy.
Right.
We you know, you don't live enough long enough to make all the mistakes yourself. So I just want to be here as a leadership example for you of what not to do. But to answer your question, I think, you know, leadership is influence. And for a long time, I thought, well, I'm just kind of a cog in the wheel of a big company. But then the more I started to think about it, you know, I'm already leading in a way. I'm influencing people.
Absolutely.
Every day, or yep. I'm not going to be asked to come back again tomorrow. And so the more I started to focus on, and I guess I've always enjoyed that, so I probably was okay at it. But, you know, I want to really, if I can help folks beyond just the business problem in front of them, you know, I'd love to do that too. And so I think at its heart, leadership is like, how can I help someone get to where they want to go or get a new perspective that's helpful to them? To me, that's what leadership is.
I couldn't agree more. You know, that's how I see myself in terms of helping people maximize their potential, realize their dreams. You know, that's why I'm trying to offer, I'm launching masterminds for school leaders, which is new to our industry, into our space. Very interested to see how that goes. Not quite sure.
And, you know, I love that you're swinging big, you know. That's one of the things that I like to try to talk to the kids about. You know, and this is, we're typically going to Christian colleges, and this is a ministry. But, you know, even if you don't share the same faith-based ideas that I do, is one of the questions I ask them is, you know, what are you really capable of? If you're like me, it's kind of easy to fall into this, you know, little old me idea, you know, not little old me. I could never do that. Well, how do you know? I pulled a question from Jim Collins that I heard him ask once, you know, what's the opposite of success? And the answer, of course, the default answer is usually failure, but really it's not. Failure is kind of the path, you know, and trouble is part of that path. So the only real failure is giving up. And I've met some wonderful young people at these events, and I'm really excited because I think there's some great leaders in the wings. I want to try to encourage them to swing big.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful picture, and you know, that question you asked, what are you really capable of? You know, I want that school leaders, put it on a sticky, put it on your mirror, your computer, something that you can see, screensaver every single day. That's a question that hits you right in the gut and definitely inspires you to do more.
Yeah, and it's so much more exciting, you know, to kind of chase the muse, right?
Yeah.
That was another learning from this experience, the TED experience, was I didn't know what the talk was going to look like when it was finished, but that it was so exciting to chase it, and it wasn't always exciting. Sometimes it was just being stuck, you know?
Hmm.
And, you know, learning that if I can stick with it, you know, the breakthroughs will come, but it's really exciting to swing big. You don't know where it's going to take you.
No, you don't. And I think that's kind of the moment where I'm at. You know, I love my job. I love working with kids. I love the community I'm at, the school I serve. But this Better Leaders, Better Schools is really exciting to me. Love being a part of the community and doing the View from the Top podcast. And I feel like something huge is right around the corner. You know, I wonder what you'd say to me and maybe other school leaders. I want to swing big. I'm not sure necessarily what I'm swinging for yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is that okay? Do I need to have that? Do I need to see more of the mold, more of the path? Or can I just kind of ride it out for the moment thinking that something huge is right around the corner? Or do I need to have that defined?
You know, Daniel, don't you think that maybe that's what we have to find out by immersing ourselves?
Hmm.
And that's the process that causes that to bubble up. You know, I know that for me, thrashing through this, all these drafts, you know, I think I did like 30 drafts for this.
Wow.
TED talk. Each time I thought, okay, I got it, you know. But in that process, it's kind of like you have to thrash to get to a clear picture of what that outcome is going to be. And I, you know, I think even if you could define it clearly in words, it's a lot different. I think it's going to be a lot different when you get there and see what it's going to become, what it has become. And in your case, I just love what you're doing, this podcast and your idea for the mastermind. To me, you know, there's kind of that's what makes it exciting, is there's kind of an element of who knows what it's going to be when it grows up, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I'm totally afraid of it.
I'm sure you're a big Seth Godin fan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's one of his criteria is, you know, you have to be saying to yourself, this might not work.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's probably not big enough. You know?
I need to send you a check in the mail. You've been just telling me all sorts of things I need to hear today. I really appreciate that.
Well, I'm really glad if it is helpful. But I did learn, and I think I am learning more and more that's really where the excitement is. And you know, our friend, well, not my friend Seth Godin, but I mean, he's all over this topic.
Absolutely. And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show. Hey, Mark, do you have a worst leadership mistake? And if so, what did you learn from it?
Well, I alluded to it a little bit ago, was this notion that I'm not just a leader. I mean, I'm not a leader. You know, I'm a sales guy. That was a huge mistake. And I think that may be the biggest one, is to underestimate the impact you can have if you're able to help enough people, you know. If it's not directed at you and what you get, but it's directed at what you can accomplish or help others accomplish, I think that's what I want to focus on.
Yeah, that's perfect. And Kurt Stowers is in the community too, and he talks about that, just like that give to give mentality. And Big A is about that too, right? Like give, and then ask. But, you know, it's very easy for me to think, okay, you know, I need to do X, Y, and Z to make a living, and, you know, I'm set. If I flip that perspective and say, well, if I served and I helped X amount of people, you know, everything else is really going to take care of itself.
Yeah, and you know, Daniel, you're like me. I think you probably wanted to get in this community and get other eyes, you know, other ears involved, because that has been so powerful for me. The worst thing that can happen to a human, I think, is to be isolated, you know, solitary confinement. I just can't, you know, most people that have extended solitary confinement go insane.
Right.
And at the opposite extreme, though, is other people are kind of like a mirror, you know, they see parts of you, you know, if I were standing behind you, Daniel, and looking at the back of your head, I've seen something you've never seen before in your life. Well, you've looked in the mirror and seen it, but you've never seen the back of your head. And I'm just as a passing onlooker, I know something about you you don't know. You know, I know what the back of your head looks like.
Right. It's a great back of the head. It's beautiful.
And to me, there's so much of that about ourselves and our plans and our, you know, our designs. And I think it was on the same webcast that that I was on. The guy was talking about the importance of accountability, and he said, but it doesn't work if you're not real, you know, if you're not authentic. And so that's, to me, that's a really powerful force.
I love asking this next question specifically to people outside of our industry, because I think you guys will have a much more imaginative, creative answer for me. In your opinion, Mark, what is one class we should add to our schools that really isn't taught that you are aware of?
Well, I think it's probably the entrepreneurial mindset. I mean, I don't know about you. It's been a long time since I went to school. You went today, right?
Yeah, I was there today. I clocked it.
But, you know, an entrepreneur is all about building something. And I don't remember classes that made me think, okay, what can I make? Knowing this, learning this, what can I make? So I think, you know, an entrepreneurial class, and I think more and more there's even entrepreneurial degrees, but I don't know. I think also about, I read today about a company it's a $26 million company, and they've partnered with the community college on a machine trade curriculum. They've got a injection molding company. And so the students go to school at night, and then they work during the day. And then ideally, during the day, they're able to talk about what they see on the job. And I was thinking, wow, that's got to be a pretty powerful dynamic.
Yeah, that sounds really great. And it's like this idea of workplace embedded development or job embedded professional development, but for kids where they get their hands dirty at the job and then can discuss, I guess, what they experienced, what they learned, yeah, what mistakes they made at school, and think about how to do it even better, more effectively.
You know, the other thing I was thinking about that question, Daniel, have you heard of the 70-20-10 model?
You emailed me that, and I'm still going through all the resources you shared, but no, please share that with our leaders.
Well, that interested me because it's one that our group has adopted for our development this year.
Okay.
And the idea is 70% of your development effort should be based on experience. You know, what experience can you immerse yourself in? That's 70%. 20% is relational. In other words, learning from others. And then 10% is formal or book. Mm. And, you know, book, webcasts, that type of thing. And, you know, that I just learned about that. It's the beginning of the year. But it really made me think about the way I learn. And my impulse is always when I've got something new to learn is I go look for a book.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, really thinking about it and thinking, you know, what do I know about this? Where have I seen it in place in the world? How can I get involved in maybe a work situation or another situation where I can have hands-on application? Because the more I've thought about it, you know, like if I need to learn to shoot free throws, I've got a friend, his name's Basketball Bill, and he's like 80, and he can shoot free throws literally without missing probably from now until, you know, the sun goes down. And I was thinking I could read about free throws, and I may improve a little bit. And then I could ask somebody about what I read and say, okay, so, you know, how do I hold my feet? What's the right stance, you know, and all these kind of things. But I'm really not going to start learning how to sink free throws until I step up to the line and start shooting them. And I don't know if that answers your question, but it seems to me that anything that's going to draw on the hands-on experiential element is really going to be powerful as a learning experience.
Yeah.
That 70-20-10 thing just seems to ring true to my work experience and life experience.
Well, it's a great idea. It's a philosophy, a structure that we should adopt more readily in schools. And, you know, it's a shame to say for the longest time, we've probably flipped that, right? Where it was 10% really the experience. And on the other end of the spectrum, it was 70% in the books or more, right?
Yeah.
Tests and you know, turn this in, do this worksheet and that sort of thing. I am excited to say that there is a trend within schools across our nation right now to engage in something called project-based learning. And that's really what you're talking about. Real-world application, real-world scenarios, real-world problems that need solutions. And you pose those ideas to the kids, and they go do amazing things because they're not always exposed to those type of real problems. But through coaching, you know, through mentorship, they can really tackle some pretty incredible challenges that we face. And with their collective creativity come the solutions that we might not even be able to come up with as adults. They own it when you create, you know, some type of real audience as well that will come in and rate the project or the solution. It really just ups the ante, and that's definitely the direction that our schools need to be moving in.
Yeah, that's cool. And, you know, it's going to take some innovation and creativity to draw that out of the students. And you're just the guy to do it, Daniel.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Mark. We got, you know, it's a big fight. Like, that idea is so great, but then you think about the whole structure of even a school district, and I'm a big fan of Joseph Grenny, Crucial Conversations, Influencers. I'm not sure if you've read either of those books, but I know that you're going to connect to the idea of what type of systems and structures do we have in place that either promote what we want or act as a barrier or obstacle to what we want. And so we want to do these project-based learning, these units, try to really engage in these challenges that need to be solved, but we still have a 45-minute class period, and the bell's going to ring, and then they need to go somewhere else. So, I mean, the whole thing needs to be shook up, you know, kind of like an Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah.
And then redrawn is what needs to happen for sure in our schools today.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge, too, and it's going to be troublesome.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think it's something that we're going to have to do, and I know that we're challenged to keep up. You know, you see companies importing folks with the technological expertise that our students don't seem to have, and that's not sustainable, you know.
So I mentioned Crucial Conversations and Influencers. What book would you recommend, Mark, that principals should read right now, and why should they read it?
You know, the one that's on my mind the most is one I just finished, and it's John Maxwell's latest, and it's called Intentional Living. And I like it. You know, I've read some John Maxwell, and I can't say, you know, that I've read them all or always just followed his stuff over the years. But what I like about this is he really tells a story and blends it in with the concepts that he's putting forth in this book, which is, I think at the heart of it, it's really hard to be intentional when you're self-focused. And for him, the transition came when he moved from a success mindset of what can I get out of it to a significance mindset of how can I really make a difference for others, help others make an impact. It's a really powerful read, and I've found it really, really inspiring. And, you know, it's one of those books that you close and you kind of sit back and think, okay, how can I incorporate some of this kind of mindset in my life and work?
Yeah, I love that idea in that intentional living. So that'll be in the show notes for all our guests, our listeners. And that might even be a book, too, that we should read as a mastermind, too, that I'm launching. I think that would really benefit everybody that participates. Mark, what do you do for fun besides giving world-famous TED Talks?
Well, we've got a little place. We moved out to the sticks a little bit. We're 6 or 7 miles outside of town in a little farmhouse that we're renovating. And my wife's already got the mini pig and the second dog, and I think there's more animals on the way, and I'm excited about it. It's going to be a change, and that's going to be. But I'm seeing that that's also going to be what I like to do for fun, even if not all of it's fun. But it's kind of exciting because, you know, to see if we can grow some of our own veggies and so forth, and take a run at it. So, and then reading. You know, I spend a lot of time reading. I spend time and with. I've got a couple groups of guys that I like to hang out with that kind of serve as that mirror that kind of, you know, look me in the eye and say, really?
Yeah. They can call you on your stuff. That's great.
Yeah. I really enjoy this gig where we go around and talk to kids at the colleges. You know, my mind's always kind of thinking of ways that I can be more helpful to them and ideas and so forth. I have a mentor. I actually have a couple of mentors, and they're very, very helpful. I guess that's not exactly a hobby or anything, but I really do enjoy that.
No, that's the best thing for the longest. You know, and I think this is a family of origin wound, but, you know, my parents were divorced. And so probably from fourth grade on, I really grew up without, you know, dad in the house and a male figure there. Definitely connected to guys, one of my best friends' dads and other men within the school, but to have mentors, right, that can show you the way, and I think that's what attracted me to the community. Iron sharpens iron, and Aaron is that, you know, somebody that has done well for themselves for 30 years, and not just finances, because really that doesn't even matter, but in relationships, you know,
the
fact that he's been married for 30 years, like, that means a lot to me.
Yeah.
So to have that mentorship, to have those type of guys around you is an incredible gift, and it is fun. I'm connected with a guy, Rob Campbell, at my church. He's just like Aaron, you know, says some different things, but been with his wife forever, has a bunch of great kids, has done well for himself in business, and I'm blessed that I get to hang out with him once a month before church, and we just talk about life. And
oh, that is so great. And, you know, I feel like I should say something here, Daniel.
Please.
The TED Talk is kind of like the polished, shiny version of a personal struggle that, you know, I could go through the list with you, but
right.
all the biggies are on there. And if I hadn't had those guys, and one guy in particular who's about 20 years older than me,
okay,
to talk to during those times. Because, you know, when you get in trouble and things get dark, you tend to isolate.
Yep.
You don't want people to know. And most people didn't know what I was going through. And I was going through a lot, you know, all across the spectrum. And I look back now and think, you know, in a way, he saved my life by offering me a wise, patient perspective.
Wow.
And I just, in case there's anybody that is out there that's going through a dark spot, in a dark place, you know, that can really be the light that you need to get some perspective and start getting the courage to dig your way out of it. So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Mark. That's going to be very meaningful for a lot of our listeners. So you've made it. I want to congratulate you. We're at the last question of the podcast.
All right.
And it's a big one, so take it slow, but it's okay. You're building a school, Mark, from the ground up. You're not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
Wow. So hire Daniel.
Okay.
Go talk to my mentor and say, oh my God, Jim, you've got to help me. And then, you know, I think I would start to think about how can I start clanging around the pots and pans here to figure out what's really, wow, what a huge job, right? Where do you start? But I think I would probably talk to a lot of people, but then I would have to figure out a way to try some things that might be a little outside the box. I mean, there's a lot of schools out there already, and there's probably a pretty well-worn template for them. And, you know, why? there's a time when reinventing the wheel isn't the best way to do things. You know, it'd be a tricky business. But I think that's where I would start, is talking to a lot of people and rethinking what did I get out of my school experience, and what would have made it better, and who's doing. I know there's a lot of people in education that are doing exciting things and success stories, and you know, I think you do need to learn from them. But then, you know, how can you make it unique as well?
Well, Mark, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
I am, I seem to spend most of my time on LinkedIn, so that's probably the best way to reach out to me. I'm committing to begin to start to create a website, but that'll be markmodesti.com. And I've got the URL and everything. I'm just trying to figure out what it wants to be when it grows up. And words of advice, I don't know, just swing big, you know, try something that scares you a little. That's what I would say.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Mark. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Mark in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. On most mobile phones, you can tap the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Mark, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Daniel. What a pleasure.
Hey, Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.